Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. Once again, I'd like to thank each and every one of you for giving me another hour of your day and another day of your time. We'd like to thank each and every one of you for joining us on the most powerful platform for truth, bar none, anywhere on YouTube, Rumble, Odyssey, Locals, Twitter, Twitch, or whatever it may be. Thank you for joining us on this platform, the Red Pill Diaries. And so this will be, we're going to try to keep this as a condensed short show. I'm actually in pain. My shoulder is really bothering me. And I had some personal issues I had to take care of yesterday, so we didn't get a live. But we're going to get one today. I want to go right into the situation at hand. There was something that I wanted to talk to you guys about, but the previous show, day before yesterday, as we ended it, I could not talk to you about it, even as we played the news clip. So I want to refresh your memories a little bit and go back to a news clip that we played on the last show. But I want to talk about how America's priorities are so out of whack, so out there, that they don't match the will of the people, nor the national security interests of the republic or even of the empire. It seems like they're always out of step with the people. They're always out of lockstep with what is actually, what should actually be viewed as national priorities and national security issues. For instance, we're watching the violence that is transpiring across the Horn of Africa, the Middle East, down in Peru with the protests, all across Ukraine and the Baltics, and the upheaval in Europe. And at home, within America's own borders, there is multiple shootings on a daily basis, mass shootings. They even label them in the news as mass shootings, right? It's amazing that these mass shooters, they don't get the label as Christian terrorists or Christian fundamentalists if they so happen to be done by Christian or someone who has espoused them, because there's no way you can carry out that stuff and call yourself a follower of Christ. But anyway, there is little connection between the religion and the person. But if it is somebody who yells out Allahu Akbar, or if it's somebody that has a name that says Muhammad or or Yusef or a Malik or something like that, it then gets associated with fundamentalism, Islamic fundamentalism or Islamic terrorism. And they continue to use these things. What the government is doing is vilifying a particular religion and vilifying a particular people. This is what they're doing. They know what they're doing because they are the masters of technology and propaganda. They disassociate that from the religion of choice in the nation, but they associate that with the religion in the crosshairs, the hypocrisy. You see how I call the stuff out. Like if a person named Yusef commits a crime, he's a Islamic terrorist, he's a fundamentalist, right? But if a person named David does it, he was angry or depressed or something like that. There's a disassociation of the religion from David, but there's an association of the religion with Yusuf or Malik. Do you see this? And this is what has been the U.S. government and the Western world have been doing since that false flag that happened in 2001. They have been trying to vilify a particular people and a particular religion so that they can push their agenda on the masses. See, if you dehumanize a person and you are constantly bombarding people with propaganda in the negative against a supposed person, people, government, or religion, then you deconstruct their mind. You make them view that person, that people, or that nation, that government, or that religion as not human or not close to your religion. And it kills me with this stuff because I often, when I'm talking to people, when we have a chance to sit down and communicate with each other, when we have a chance to converse with one another in an educational manner, just to build, to build bridges. 9 times out of 10, they all concur with my perspective. They always concur with my viewpoint and the way that I break stuff down, you know. So what I'm telling you is this vision from 2001, which it had preceded 2001, but 2001 was the jump-off point. And it was to reshape, mold, and refashion the Middle East. But how could you do that? How could you reshape, mold, and refashion North Africa and the Middle East without blowback from the people in your own country? Because they're going to say, why are you going over there to restructure, remold, rebuild, and refashion those people when here at home we need bridges, we need roads, we need streets, we need education, we need health care, we need Head Start, we need all of this stuff, we need heating aid, home aid, rent aid, energy aid, everything. So how can I get the people on board with me? Well, then I vilify a people. I use a pretext. Remember that prior to 2011, they were looking for a pretext? This gets left out. They were looking for a pretext to go into North Africa in the Middle East and reshape and remold that area into its image and into its likeness. This is what the U.S. Military, the U.S. government, the U.S. empire, and all of their minions have openly admitted. So I'm not saying something that should be surprised. That is the case. You break down opposition to your plans, especially when this endeavor may cost hundreds of billions of dollars and even into the trillions. Well, what you do is you dehumanize. You use an event, whether it is a natural event or a false flag event, most likely a false flag event, and you run with that false flag event to break down resistance to your plans. And when you put your plans in motion, you only reveal so much of your plans. And you only reveal them as needed to further your goals of remaking, rebuilding, reconstructing that area of the world into my image and likeness. Why is that very important? It's because America and the West wanted to do this. They had a plan to move on 7 nations in 5 years, or 5 nations in 7 years, or something like that, according to Wesley Clark, the former NATO allied supreme commander. He said that. He said that the United States wanted to move on, what, 7 Muslim countries in 5 years, or 5 Muslim countries in, I think it was 7 in 5 years. Right? And it is no coincidence that they start kicking off the box with these nations. Right? If you look at the nations that were attacked and the nations that were bombed, these were nations on that list. One has escaped. That is Iran. Why am I telling you this? And why did the media drop the ball on this? All right? Why? It is because the media has an inherent interest and a cause to drop the ball on this because of the financial benefits to the government and to the media. Because if they dominate this region, they dominate the oil and the gas. That means that they can keep the oil and gas on dollar denomination, which means that they can give the empire a shot in the arm of blood. They can give it, IV. Because the empire is dehydrated and it needs some kind of rehydration. So to rehydrate the empire, to continue to expand the empire, to continue to keep the military industrial complex going, to continue to enrich those that are already enriched, you had to dominate this region of the world. And to dominate that region of the world, guess what happens? You have to vilify the people, the religion, the culture, to destroy the opposition in your own corners of the globe, so that now it becomes more easier for you to implement your plans and inflict war and colonialism and occupation on these nations. And you do it under the guise of humanitarianism and territorial integrity and national sovereignty, all the while you are violating national sovereignty and territorial integrity. Now tell me if I'm lying. France, Germany, Italy, Spain, the UK, the United States, Canada, Australia, and a host of other European nations used this event to reoccupy and colonize Africa, the Northern Africa. They used this event to not remove themselves or extricate themselves from the Middle East. They doubled down and opened up more bases. If we look at Syria, were they invited there by the legitimate, recognized government of the Syrian Arab Republic? No. Has the Syrian Arab Republic government demanded the removal of these illegal occupation folks? Yes. What about in Lebanon? Huh? What about in Somalia? What about in Yemen? What about in Eritrea? What about in Djibouti? What about in the Sudan? Right? So if you vilify these people, their religion, and their way of life, it becomes easier, more palatable for the Western population to accept imperialism and colonialism draped in humanitarianism. Okay? But this has caused untold loss of national treasure for America, for Britain, for the EU. For to maintain the Western way of living, they constantly need new hosts so that they can latch on. And now they're coming to an end because they used this experiment with Georgia and got a shellacking from the Russian forces. They used this the same blueprint in Ukraine, and they are getting a shellacking by the Russian forces in Ukraine. But all the while, the debt burden continues to grow. All the while, trade continues to get cut off. All the while, nations are moving outside of the dollar using local currencies and local payment systems. All the while, this is being exacted and done outside of dollar denomination, pound denomination, euro denomination. But the debt has not stopped in the West. The spending has not stopped in the West. So, let us use common sense for a minute. If I make $80,000 a year and I continue to spend $800,000 a month, How do you think that that would bode well for my financial security in the near to long-term future? Well, that is no different. If governments continue to spend unabated and they continue to print money ad nauseum, yet their levels of taking in revenue continues to diminish. And now you see nations that once invested in U.S. infrastructure, U.S. businesses, and U.S. treasury now parking their money outside of the Western-dominated financial system. How does that bode well for me and my allies when we continue to spend and we don't have the wherewithal to stop spending because we need this money or else everything stops? How do you think that's going to end? Huh? I'm asking you. And for those of you who are listening, yeah, this is the thing for my shoulder. And I am hurting. But let's go here. All right, we'll go to this article. It was another article I wanted to see. But I will come back to that other article if time is, permits it. But I want to go to this one real quick. Now, excuse me one second. It's on the Economic Collapse blog, okay? And the title of it is this. It isn't just the economy that is on the verge of collapse. This article was published May 31st, 2023 by Michael Schneider of the Economic Collapse blog, okay? And I'm reading it for the first time with you. So let's go. He says, we are in far more trouble than most people realize. In recent months, our rapidly growing economic problems have gotten a lot of attention. And without a doubt, our economy is heading into really hard times. The greatest debt bubble in the history of the world. Remember, I told you guys that yesterday on the last show. In the history of the world has started to implode. Now, let us get an understanding of what that means, okay? Hold on one second. I am trying my best. Hold on one second, everybody. Go here. All right, where's Google? So, give me a second. I'm looking for something right here. Google, I guess, bubbing it. Yeah, Google's scrubbing it from its good. It's all good. Google is tripping. I'm searching for a term that I saw on Google the other day, but since we can't get it, we're going to go into some. One monkey don't stop the show. Okay? So, listen, it says, the greatest debt bubble in the history of the world has started to implode. This is what Michael Schneider is talking about. Now, let us go to something real quick. Told you, Google, you can't stop me. The word implode means, according to the dictionary, the word implode is a verb. It means collapse or cause to collapse. Inward. I think we did read part of this the other day. Violently and inwards. So, check this out. So, the greatest debt bubble in the history of the world has started to implode or collapse violently inwards. Now, if you are a citizen of the nation where the debt bubble is imploding and it is becoming more violent and it is imploding, which means inwardly, you are to be affected by those, by that violent turn of events. Now, instead of the government focusing on that, which is the smart thing to do, and to try to put things in place that will minimize the effects of this violent unfolding of events, especially when we're talking about in economic terms, they would rather have you think about places thousands of miles away or to reinvest in a $10 trillion nuclear armaments program or trillions in the nuclear industry or trillions in the Defense Department, or hundreds of billions in aid to Ukraine and all of these other Western satellites All the while, there's a violent wind blowing at home. The growing unemployment. They fudged the numbers talking about, oh, employment grew for such and such. You got to be aware of these numbers. But if you go to John, what is his name? I forget his name. John something. Of shadowstats.com. He gives you the numbers that the government used to use. Not these made up phony numbers to hide inflation, to hide unemployment, to hide homelessness and all of that stuff. He gives you according to what the measurements were by the government until they got in such a dire position till they disregarded all those and started a new way to account for stuff. Now listen, I often say this on the show, that charity starts at home, then it spreads abroad. He who secures everything secures nothing and leaves himself exposed at home. Now, you got thousands of troops everywhere around the globe to try to enforce your dictates and your power on the world. All the while, there are over 65,000 roads, bridges, and vital infrastructure that needs to be upgraded immediately. Every day, thousands of people are joining the homeless or the hungry or the hurt. All the while, you have to work 2 and 3 jobs to buy what you usually could buy with one paycheck. What I'm trying to show you and I'm trying to show those in government is that if you think about everybody outside of your borders, you neglect the people within your borders, and then this will lead to insurrection, strife, rebellion, civil excitement, and civil war. When a person has lost everything, and you can continue to see the government investing abroad, and they can always find money for war. They can always find money for weapon systems, for weapon R&D, that's research and development. But they can't find it for Head Start. They can't find debt relief for students. Again, let's go to this since we're on this debt part. So the Congress had a problem with Joe Biden wanting $10,000 student debt relief, right, in the bill. Now, all of this was set up. This is what the talks were about. Neither one of them really wanted it, but they had to put it in there, the give and take, and then one in opposition, one showing support for it, and then the one that's in opposition wants this, and the one that shows support for the debt relief is against this. So what they did behind closed doors, they made you believe that the ones on the tail side of the coin wanted you to believe that they were just trying to stop unnecessary spending. And Joe Biden was trying to pretend like he was this benevolent person to bestow at least $10,000 in debt relief on the future, on the students' future, okay? And then vice versa, when you flip it, neither one of them really wanted that. This was for show. Because whenever the president really wants something or whenever Congress really wants something, they get it done. So, but I want you to see the flaw in their thinking, okay? The right, the so-called right and the left. In the middle, you have students. These students go to universities, go to colleges, junior colleges, trade schools, specialized schools and different things, nursing schools and all of this stuff. These people are your future nurses, lobotomists, doctors, business managers, office of managers, presidents of hospitals and all of these things that are vital to America and vital to our economy. These people are scientists, lawyers, policemen, firemen, teachers, all of these people who are in debt have gone in debt with the expectation that once I get this degree or this certificate, then I'll be able to better my life and get a better paying job with higher pay and better benefits, right? Now, when they get out, they find that there are no better jobs. Or if they are, you have to jump through hoops to get it. And when you jump through hoops to get it, you are in such a bad economic space that your first 5, 10, 15, 20 years of you working that job is to pay back the debt from going to school. Now, why am I bringing it up? Because it's very important that you understand this. According to history, no society has progressed, has succeeded, and has maintained its way by putting an untold burden on your future leaders, teachers, scientists. And what's more is the teachers. Why? Because those are the stewards of the and the shapers of the minds of the future leaders, politicians, doctors, lawyers, and generals. But they get small pay, unappreciated, right? And then you can find money to give somebody throwing a basketball through a hoop $50 million a year. Do you not see the degradation of society, the unfolding of society, when they put more emphasis on sport and play than on teaching and education? So they're not thinking about domestic security in that manner. They're arming the police to the teeth without a thought of true domestic security. Because I don't care how much you arm the police, if the people whom they are supposed to serve are at a disadvantage financially, then you are brewing a homemade civil war within your own borders. All the while, you're cutting this in the budget and cutting that domestically. But you can find $300 million for Ukraine. You can find another billion for Ukraine. You can find another billion to bribe a leader of another country. You can put another $20 to $80 billion in emergency military appropriations. You can always find money for war and those things that revolve around war. But for the benefit and the dignity of your own civilians, you can never have that hard to find a way to find them a place to stay, to eat, to give them a job so that they can have dignity. Let's see how that works out. Let's go further. He says, the greatest debt bubble in the history of the world has started to implode. And the end of this mega cycle is going to cause an immense amount of pain. As I told you guys, when I talked to Gregory Mannarino, go sub to his channel, also sub to his Trader's Choice. You can go to traderschoice.net. You can also find him on YouTube. Gregory Mannarino told me that when this debt bomb finally explodes, the ramifications will be such that it would wipe out more life than a nuclear exchange. So people will die. Think about this. Think about it. It's one thing when you're hungry. You can make a way because that's you. But what if you have two children? What if you have four children? What if you have custody of four children, plus four children? Or what if you have a family of eight and there's no food in the stores because America has embargoed everybody, so when war comes around, guess what? She gets embargoed. What about the people who have been practicing for war for years, who have served in the military, and when the debt bomb goes off and you can no longer afford these extravagant bases around the world, and you have to bring home these troops from their military excursions around the world, and when they come home, they find that they no longer can afford to pay their mortgage or their rent. They can no longer buy Similac for the children. They can no longer buy food for the family. They can't pay the light bill. These people have been trained for war, and without the dollar being the life's blood of the economic global economic scene, as people are now getting off the dollar, we're going to see a rush of dollars within America, which causes hyperinflation. And now you got your troops back at home, can't afford food, can't afford housing. They're looking at their children saying, Mom, Dad, I'm hungry. I'm hungry. Now reason starts to dissipate. And desperation sets in. Because it's one thing when it's you. But then it's a whole different ball game when it's your little ones or your loved ones that need to eat, need something to drink, need a place to lay their head, need some security. I don't think the leadership grasps these things because there's no way that they can invest trillions in war and let the people at home starve and go homeless and all of this stuff and be able. I want you to think about this. Please, please, just think about it. Think about this. How can there be any national security if the people of that nation feels no security? You can have 1,000 military bases around the world. You can have the most powerful military force on the planet. But at home, the people are feeling not heard. They're hungry. They're homeless. They're hurting. And all of this starts to brew up. This is a recipe for an explosion at home. And they don't give this a second wind. Let them eat cake. That's their moment. Let them eat cake. Well, this is the truth. When the people can no longer find things to eat and the anger builds up, metaphorically speaking, they'll eat you, the politicians. You understand? So, again, we'll go into this, and I see some comments in the chat. Hold on one second. Let me see if I can get the YouTube chat up real quick. Hold on one second. Yeah. Excuse me. So I wonder why YouTube has been acting like this with me. Anyway, Astral Atmosphere, I'm here. Sorry I'm late. I'm a rewatch. Yeah, like, share, and subscribe, please. Hit the like button, please, and share and subscribe. And also, if you are listening and you're not a channel member or if you're not a subscriber, please feel free to subscribe and let us discuss these topics and let us be agreeable to disagree if we disagree. Also, if you like, I would really like it if you join and become a channel member. We're going to drop more heat this weekend if I get a chance to my shoulder. Father, but I drop more heat on the channel member side. Thank you so much for each and every one of you. Now, let's go back to this real quick. So, it goes on and says this, and the end of this mega cycle is going to cause an immense amount of pain. But if every other element of our society was strong, we could survive that. It may surprise a lot of you to hear me say that, but it is true. If all that we were facing was an economic collapse, it would cause an enormous amount of turmoil in this country, but we would make it through. Unfortunately, listen to what he says, we are not just facing an economic collapse. See? He said, and listen to what he follows that up with. I like to call what we are facing the everything collapse, because virtually every element of our society is steadily breaking down right in front of our eyes. I'm going to read that part again. If all that we were facing was an economic collapse, it would cause an enormous amount of turmoil in this country. But we would make it through. Unfortunately, let me go here real quick. Give me a second real quick. You know I like to give definitions. So you guys, give me a second. All right, here we are. Unfortunately, comes from the word unfortunate, which is an adjective, and it means having or marked by bad fortune, unlucky, hapless, out of luck, down on one's luck, luckless. So now we know what unfortunate means. Let us read that again. Unfortunately, we are not just facing an economic collapse. This is what he says, unfortunately. Then what are we facing? He says, I like to call what we are facing the everything collapse, because virtually every element of our society is steadily breaking down right in front of our eyes. Now, if this is the case, right, and it is absolutely the case, wouldn't your resources be better served, wouldn't your people be better served by you taking your resources and investing in your people? Like you invested in Ukraine, like you invested in the color revolutions around the world, like you are invested into an Asian pivot of military weapons and personnel to try to confront China. Wouldn't that money be best served giving a break to those who will be your future leaders by removing the burden of student debt? What about heating aid, home aid? What about senior citizens and other people not having to choose between whether or not to pay the light bill or get their prescriptions filled, or getting their prescriptions filled and being able to eat that day? Wouldn't it best serve the American Republic to reinvest that little money that she has while the dollar is still accepted in some nations around the world? Wouldn't it be better spent in the reinvestment of the population of the people of America instead of Ukraine, instead of color revolution, instead of war, instead of weapons? Wouldn't it better suit and serve America's national interest to uplift and secure the livelihoods of her population within her own borders? This is a sound question, right? Let's look at something real quick. Meaning of unfortunate, we looked at. Now let's look at the meaning of everything, because he says that I call this the everything collapse. Everything is a pronoun, and it means all things, not some things, not most things, not part of the things, but it means everything, all in all things of a group or a class, every single thing, the whole lot, each thing, every article, every item. So when we're talking about a collapse that is going on, we're talking about on every level in American and Western society. Everything. The culture, right? The way of governance, whether it be on a city or county or whatever scale. Everything is collapsing. The job market, the housing market, right? Wall Street, everything is collapsing. America's having her time in the sun, with the dollar being the global reserve currency, that's collapsing. America being the number one economy, that's collapsing. America being the largest exporter, that's collapsed. America being the largest importer, that's collapsed. America being the largest oil consumer, that's collapsed. America being the largest gas consumer, that's collapsed. America being the number one nation in education, that's collapsed. Everything that she once dominated in is being uprooted, and yet she can still find money for war, color revolutions, overthrow, assassinations, and provocations. How the hell is that serving her national security? You tell me that. So check this out. Before I go further, since I'm talking on national security, I want to bring to light something. So earlier today, I went to pick up my daughter from work. And so she and I were in the car. Well, actually, I was sitting out in the car waiting for her. She had come out to the car, and we talked for a minute. And she said, I'll be out in like 5-10 minutes. Give me 5-10 minutes. I said, okay. So while that was going on, I was listening to news on YouTube, all right, over my stereo system. So I was listening to Alex Cristoforo of the Duran, all right, and he was talking about Belarus's president. Well, some people call it Belarus. Belarus's president. All right. Matter of fact, hold on 1 second. Let me pull this up real quick. Hold on 1 second, everybody. He was talking about how Lukashenko, the president of Belarus, and part of the two states that comprises the Union State of Russia and Belarus. Okay, a lot of you don't know that, but that is what it is. So that's why I like to give definitions and I like to go into certain things and not just leave it out there. But so Alex Christoforou was talking about how the Belarusian president, I had already read it, but I heard him say it, but I had already read it. The Belarusian president was talking about Russia should have already gone into Ukraine in 2014. And then he was talking about the pros and cons there. It's amazing. The reason I brought that up, it's amazing because if you notice, if you go back to our shows the previous months and even the previous year or so, we brought up that multiple times and we were shot down when we were talking about that. And we said that Russia had the Ukrainian army on the ropes. But Putin gave in to the demands of the West, thinking that it would be a negotiated peace settlement, when he should not have stopped the people in the Donbass for going all the way to Kiev and having a regime change themselves, right? And then the pros and cons we brought out is maybe Russia's economy wasn't strong enough to withstand what they're withstanding now, and maybe they were almost done with the hypersonic weapons and all of that stuff, and they were just waiting to bring them online or whatever. They had to build up a stock of them. We talked about all that. But it's amazing, a year after we talked about it, everybody else is talking about it. Even Lukashenko is taking some of what we said and is saying, go read the article about it, and then go back and listen to some of the stuff when we talked about this. It's amazing, right? But, of course, we're small. We're a small platform. We won't get any credit for it. But it's okay, so long as the truth gets out, okay? But I just had to bring that up because when I heard the conversation about it, the first thing I did, I smiled. I said, you know what? Thought travels. Look at that. We've been talking about this. It's been on Rashid and my mind for the longest, and we've talked over it multiple shows, multiple sessions, and it didn't get any traction with anybody. And now, all of a sudden, everybody's talking about it. Everybody's talking about it, which I'm thumbs up for that. I really appreciate people talking about that. But to be honest with you, the conversation and that thought, that line of thought came from this platform. That is the truth. And if you don't believe me, you can go back and just go back and listen to some of the older shows, and you'll see what we're talking about. We even go into detail on the pros and cons of that back then. All right. But again, Lukashenko was talking about that, and I was like, they are getting fed up. Something is escalating. For him to openly say that, especially at a time when he openly stated that NATO and the U.S. are trying to have another color revolution to overthrow the president of Belarus, right? This shows you that something is up in the intelligence community, and there's something up in the security state for these nations, excuse me, and their security. When you see stuff like this and when you hear stuff like this, you have to look at it from a distance and say, oh, I see why America's losing on the battlefield. She's losing at every turn, so desperation sits in. NATO is losing at every turn, and we see that everything she's trying, it's making things that much worse. America can't just come out and say, you know what, listen, I made a mistake. I did this right here. I apologize for it. I was wrong in that. Everybody, please stay on the dollar. I'm going to return all of this stuff here. I'm going to try to do better by everybody. I tell you what, everybody, just give me a 6 months grace period to prove to you that I will no longer weaponize the dollar. I will no longer do this, even if it did not stop the tide from turning. In her decline, people will have sympathy on her for acknowledging the stuff that she's done and trying to make amends of it. But that's not what America, Great Britain, and the EU is doing. As a matter of fact, the EU is so arrogant about this. Check this out. Let me go to something while I'm talking to you guys. I'm telling you, they don't know anything but doubling down on failure. Let's see if I can find this. Let's see if it's here. Because I have it, I may have not have downloaded, but it's about the EU. And they are trying to talk to Russia behind closed doors. Listen to me good. You have sanctioned, you have did, what, 9, 10 sanction packages. Not one, not two, not three, not four. You've done almost a dime on me. Either a dime or you're going into a dozen, a baker's dozen on me of sanction packages. You're following America and everything she's doing. And then you, behind closed, and you are openly stating that the only way to end this crisis is we must continue to arm Ukraine. Ukrainian and NATO soldiers are dying. Russian soldiers are dying. And this battle is starting to intensify and escalate now. And all while that is taking place, you want to give Putin a call behind closed doors and ask him if he can spot you some oil and gas because the markets are getting tight and Europe is running out of oil and gas. Man, if you don't get the hell out of here with that madness, listen to me good. That is tantamount to the rapist asking for mercy from the victim. Do you understand? While raping the victim, please, and the victim has now gotten her hand on the gun. Now you beating her in the face. You've broken her leg. She's got her hand on the gun now. And I'm not advocating violence, rape, or anything. But I have to say this before this system in YouTube picks that up and starts saying I'm advocating, but I'm not advocating that. And the victim now finds a chance to get you off of them. They have come into contact with a gun, and now you're begging them, please don't shoot me. You've raped them. You've swollen her face. You've broken her legs. And then you have told her, you have talked to her while you were doing it, said, oh, you're not going to escape this. When I get done, I'm going to kill you. And then when the victim now gets the gun, you want mercy on you. What kind of stuff is that? But that's only in the mind of a lunatic. And I continue to tell you that the leaders of America and the leaders of the UK and the leaders of Europe are berserkers. Look up what berserker is. They are berserkers. And they get a joy, a thrill, almost like a sexual pleasing of the blood and gore and the war that they prosecute and perpetrate across the globe. And I'm going to tell you why it's like that. And you can't defend or defeat what I'm saying. You can't defeat what I'm saying. You can't defend their side against what I'm saying. If it was not something that they get turned on by, then why the hell would they constantly do it? You do things over and over that you get gratification by, that you derive pleasure from. So if you're constantly making war, you're constantly bombing people, you're constantly occupying and you're constantly raping, you are getting some type of gratification, some type of feeling off that. And when the people fight back that you bomb, that you rape, that you rob, and that you occupy, they become insurgents and terrorists. You 2,000, 5,000, 7,000, 10,000 miles away from your shores, and they're defending their people, their territory, their resources, and they're the insurgents, and they're the terrorists. In the mind of the berserker, in the mind of the lunatic, in the mind of bizarro world, that's right. But in the mind of rational people, in a civil society, that's wrong. So we see these people being berserkers. We see it. We're going to read a little bit more of this. Let's see. Let me look back. Oh, CC is there too. Thank you for joining, CC. Everybody is, hopefully everybody is well too. I'm doing pretty good. I'm going to keep the show down to a minimum today because I took some pain medicine for my shoulders. It's killing me. And I'm a little, you know, I get a little drowsy a little bit. So I'm going to try to keep this down under 2 hours, you know. But listen. Let's go to something real quick. Let me put this in the search engine real quick. Hold on. Not the Google search engine, but in this website search engine. Let me see if I can find it. What was it? Okay. Belarus. Okay. Here it is. All right. All right. Oh, here it is right here. So, right here. The title of the article is Russia Should Have Launched Ukraine Operation in 2014, Lukashenko says. And it was published June 1st, okay? So that was yesterday. Now, mind you, this show has been saying that since last year. since the pop-off of, and even before the pop-off of this special military operation being conducted by the Russian Federation. We have been saying that for the longest. But look what Lukashenko says here. Moscow and Minsk, now this is the article, and I'm going to read it, and then I'll tell you which part he said. Moscow and Minsk, these are the two capitals of Belarus and Russia. It says, persisted with doomed diplomatic efforts for too long, the Belarusian president believes. See, this is what I'm saying. He has come to the conclusion that they should have went on and removed these clowns before it got to this point. It got to this point. Now, for those of you who say, well, Russia's economy may not have been strong enough, which may be the case at the time. But everything Russia is doing now, they could have did then. Only with less loss of life. If Russia would have gone in, listen, here's something right here, a scenario that nobody talks about. And this is one of the scenarios that I brought forth when we talked about this last year. If Yanukovych, the world recognized Yanukovych as the legitimately democratically elected president of Ukraine, when he was ousted and backstabbed by the EU, Britain, France, and the U.S., before he left office, he should have written a presidential memorandum and a presidential executive order stating that the Ukrainian nation has been penetrated by foreign forces, and we now authorize Russian forces to enter the Ukrainian Republic. Russia could have gone in and ousted the coup instigators and the coup perpetrators, and it would have been done legally under law because Yanukovych was the democratically elected and recognized president of Ukraine. And if he would have gone in there and done it, the situation here could have been blunted. I'm not saying it could have been completely stopped, but could have been blunted. And having a man that leans more towards Russia than the West is better than having this fool that's in office right now that just does anything that the West tells him to do. But again, we talked about this last year, but this now is becoming public conversation now. And this is what everybody's saying, but we talk on this platform, Rashid and I talked about this ad nauseum. Okay, so again, now let's go back to something, because we haven't gotten off the economics. All of this plays into the economics. Remember what I just asked you, what if America stopped what she was doing and say, listen, we realize that we're the greatest debtor nation in the history of the world, and we realize, and they don't even have to openly acknowledge the hell that they have raised on earth. They could say, and we realize that some of our policies may have inadvertently did X, Y, and Z. So right now we want to show a measure of goodwill to Africa, to Latin America. The reason I said those two nations first, because those are the two nations, the two regions that have been pillaged and destroyed most by America. So we say Africa, Latin America, the Middle East, Eastern Europe, and Asia. We want to show some symbol of goodwill. We will now pull bases back. We will pull bases back, and we will have a demilitarized zone. We will also pull out all of our covert operations in these areas. Now, you say, well, that may be a detriment to American national security. What can be more detrimental than alienating everybody? Huh? You tell me that. What could be more detrimental to America's national security than going around the world spending money that you don't need to spend, threatening nations that you don't need to threaten, waging wars that you have no business being involved in or starting, right? And killing people. What can be more of a national security threat than those things? You've tried that over and over again. And all you have done is alienate people and cause all of these blocks to emerge against you that will be trading outside of your dollar. So, of course, your reasoning and your judgment has not proven to be fruitful. So if you're in a hole and you have a backhoe or a shovel and you're digging, how about for a second you put the backhoe and the shovel down and stop digging? Because these nations may give a little leniency towards you if you show contrition, if you show that you're truly sorry, right? But that's not what you do. You double, triple, quadruple down on failed policies, and you alienate more people. Do you believe that the BRICS organization would have been possible if there was no NATO, if there was no pivot to Asia, if there was no doubling down in the destabilization of Africa, if there was no overthrow of governments in Latin America? Do you believe that BRICS would have been able to form? Do you believe that Russia would have almost the entire world on its side if America had not stolen $650 billion of Russia's wealth? If America would not have constantly expanded NATO up to Russia's borders? If America would not have constantly ignored the national security interests of Russia, China, Iran, all of the Middle Eastern nations, Latin American nations, African nations, and even to our own allies in Europe? Do you believe that these alternative blocks of trade blocks and currency blocks and political blocks would have been feasible if America would not have alienated, intervened, and tried to overthrow these leaders, governments, and nations? So we know that these are a manifestation of American and Western policies, right? And if these are a manifestation of American and Western policies, and you continue to double down and triple down and quadruple down on these failed policies, and you continue to bump your head and scratch your head and say, well, why is things getting more bad for me? Why are they getting more intense for me? Why is my situation become more and more precarious by the day? If you pay all these think tanks, all of these prognosticators and geopolitical analysts and strategists to think for you a way out of the situation, and all of them have missed the boat. I can tell you a way to do justice by the people that you have been unjust to. If you show that you are sorry and do right by the people that you wronged, then maybe that can be a bludgeoning force for your collapse and fall. But we know for a surety that the policies that you enact and that you have enacted and that you are pushing to enact have led to failure, are leading to failure, and will lead to failure. So what do you have to lose by doing something altogether new? What do they attribute to Einstein? Doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result is what? The definition of insanity, right? Well, you need to go and call your politicians, your leaders, and your men of war and women of war, and tell them to stop bumping their head against a concrete wall, doing what is considered to be insane. They're not right. I mean, this is reality. So, again, let's go and read something. Because all of this takes money. To wage war against Russia takes money. To supply Ukraine with arms takes money. To be the political mouthpiece of Ukraine takes money. You know, to promote propaganda takes money. The research and development for more weapons takes money. To be a caregiver of a government that is fiscally bankrupt. This is what the United States and the West, they're caretakers of the Ukrainian government, and they pay the salaries of the Ukrainian government and those mercenaries. So to do that takes money. To deploy troops and weaponry to NATO territories takes money. To prosecute and persecute wars take money. to have military bases around the globe, at least 1,000, takes money. Now, if we were to take that money from those things that you love to do and use common sense and invest them in the very people you claim that you're promoting their security abroad, things would change so magnificently for you. Because the money would be put where it's supposed to be put. The people that you're bothering would be left alone, and they would be able to tend to their business. And when a person is tending to their business and they're so into their business, they don't have time to think about you. You become an afterthought. So you don't have to worry about the influx of terror because you're not doing the thing which produces terror. You don't have to worry about the making of war when you're not making war and provoking war. You don't have to worry about the use of nuclear weapons when you got 2,000 to 4,000 in your arsenal and nobody would use it against you. Now you can focus within your own borders. But the time is quickly running out because now the people who funded the government, those nations that you're trying to pivot towards to make war with, to break up, to vulcanize, to weaken so that you can maintain your sway, they now have a new game in town. And the game does not have the dollar written on it. It doesn't have SWIFT written on it. You have the Latin American nations coming up with their own currency and their own payment system. You have the African Union, 50-plus nations that are now putting together a united currency, the same thing that got Muammar Gaddafi killed. They now have the wherewithal now to put it into place. They have a free trade agreement. They have currency swap agreements. You see, in the Eurasian area, what are they doing? They have a Eurasian Economic Union. In West Asia, they just concluded a West Asian summit where they are now putting together their own version of SWIFT and their own monetary policies that does not include the euro, the pound, nor the dollar. We see the ASEAN or the ASEAN grouping along with China with their free trade agreement that uses the yuan and other national currencies outside of the euro, the dollar, and the pound. All of this metastasized due to American, British, and European intransigence and arrogance. And you're doubling down on failed policies. You know, it's crazy, right? Oh, man, listen. I mean, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy that this is the case. But we see it on a daily basis. These people are crazy as hell. There's no way that you can explain this stuff away. They have PhDs. They have masters and doctorates and all this and that. And yet they're running the American Republic in the ground. They're running it into the ground. And all of their degrees, they're not wise enough to see that the policy that they continue to push and propagate lies at the base of why the Republic is falling. So they're so smart to their dumb. They're so smart to their dumb. And we watch this in real time on a global scale, the fall of America, the fall of the Western world. This is true. So going back to this, again, all of that costs money. Now, how are you going to keep that going when Latin America, Africa, Eurasia, West Asia, and Asia are now moving outside of the scope of the Western-dominated financial system, outside of SWIFT, outside of the dollar, outside of the pound, outside of the euro, especially when Europe has little to no resources? So how can you make that be a happy ending? You know what you do? You revert to the things that got you to where you are. Banditry. That's what you do. So that's what they're doing. Banditry. They're trying to seize assets. They're trying to, what seizing means, is to steal, to take. That's what they do. But they want to put it in a packaged up term. Seize. No, you stole. You took. Right? And at the same time, they don't realize those actions are bringing about an equal or greater reaction. And that equal or greater reaction that science tells us would happen for every action is nations on the outside starting to do business outside of the dollar, the euro, the pound, outside of SWIFT. And yet the wise of the wise of the Western world can't see this, can't understand this, don't realize why nations are doing this. It's because of your arrogance, your intransigence, your racism, your exceptionalism. And you are always in everybody's business trying to dictate to them how they should live, what they should do, how they should do it. Do as I say, not as I do. The world has grown, they have grown fed up with that. They have. And that's why you see them unifying on the outside. As a matter of fact, let us listen to this. Pay close attention to this. This is about 5 minutes. Don't go anywhere. Hit the like button. Also, subscribe if you're not subscribed. And also, it would be a huge favor to me if you become a channel member. Thank you so much, but I want you to listen to this.
Okay, calm down.
If I could make one point, Katie, it's really important. This is part of something Americans have not yet wrapped their heads around. The American empire, like every empire before it, is now shrinking. You know, empires rise, they have a flourish. They grow. It's very impressive. And at their peak, they can't imagine that it won't last forever. It never has. Every empire, the Greek, the Roman, the Persian, the Turkish, you'll fill in the blank. They all went up, and then they went down. The ride up, much more fun than the ride down. We are now in the ride down, and we better be very careful because denial, which is the way most of America is so far dealing with it, is not a solution. It doesn't go away because you pretend it isn't happening. The dollar's decline is a literal barometer week in and week out of what we're seeing. The failure in Ukraine is another one. I mean, you've got to see, we didn't win in Vietnam. We didn't win in Afghanistan. We didn't win in Iraq. You can dance around it 20 different ways, but it is the truth. This is not an argument about who's the good guys and the bad guys. I'm just explaining where we are not facing a decline that is underway and that is showing us its face if only we're willing to see it. And we could have a, quote, decent soft landing. Empires do not have to go out in a horrible explosion. They can decline. Britain, not that they're a model, but after trying twice to stop the United States in the War of Independence and again the War of 1812, the British figured out we can't do this militarily, and they came to terms with their decline and being replaced by the American Empire. I don't know what's coming next. I don't know whether the Chinese will be the next empire or whether it'll be handled in a multinational way, and there's some evidence in both directions. But the United States is not able to do what it did. And one of the greatest mistakes empires in the past have made is overreaching when they can't do that anymore. And my fear is we're at a very delicate point in that process, hampered by a denial of what's going on that periodically frightens me.
So if our politicians could get out of the state of denial and face reality, what would that look like? What would this soft landing that you just described look like?
They would have to sit down at this point, either with China or with China and what we call the BRICS, this group of nations that are really working well together, China, India, Brazil, South Africa, Russia, I left out right. And there's a dozen other countries that have applied. So they're going to become much, much bigger in the next 12 to 24 months. You'd have to sit down with them and work out a live and let live arrangement. You know, the world needs a lot of things produced. Americans can produce some of them. Chinese can produce and Brazilian. We'd have a much better world if it were more generously distributed. It shouldn't all be in North America and Western Europe. That's a legacy of colonialism we should better put behind us. If more of the different parts of the world really are integrated, they'll be less likely to be tempted to do militarily what they really can't afford. That's already underway. We might have done terrible things vis-a-vis China if we weren't as dependent on the Chinese as we already are. From the time that Kissinger and Nixon went to China and reestablished relations with them several decades ago until 10 years ago, the United States and China were helping each other. We're trading a lot. That's when a lot of American companies invested in China, et cetera, et cetera. We were able to live together. Those were years of great prosperity in the United States and great economic growth in China. My feeling is, look, we have much to gain and we can avoid a terrible loss. A war? Are we serious? Are we going to have a war around the Taiwan in China, in the South China Sea, at the same time that we're fighting a war in Europe? Really? With countries that all have nuclear weapons? This is crazy. We can't afford to do it, and we ought to stop trying. The wealth of the United States is a great incentive for other countries to meet us halfway. Let's use the wealth to have an attempt at least. Even if we fail, it's worth the effort to try to do this rather than the saber rattling that's scaring everybody in the world and not bringing the United States out of its decline. Its decline continues. You rattle your sword against Russia and China. The situation of the United States has not gotten better. The United States is more isolated now than it was 5 years ago. Russia is not the pariah nation that the United States and Western Europe would like to claim it to be. I'm not arguing whether it's right or wrong.
Sure.
I'm not
defending it's not a moral argument
or any of that. What I'm saying is, let's be honest and look at the situation the way it is. We are fighting to the last Ukrainian, and I don't think that's a smart move at all.
I had to put that up there because I don't want no problem with YouTube or with the copyright and all of that stuff like that. I don't want nothing like that. And we're supposed to be able to use this stuff to teach and to you know, examine. So I put the copyright law up there so we won't have any problems later on. Now, isn't it ironic that he was saying some of the stuff that I was saying to you all? See, I don't think there's any grown-ups in Washington, D.C., because they act like spoiled children. If it doesn't go my way, I'm taking the ball home and I'm leaving the court. You know, this is, but they don't realize that America today is not America 30 years ago. China today is not China 30 years ago. Russia today is not Russia when the Soviet Union collapsed. But in their mind, everything is still skewed towards American dominance. This is what I'm saying, and it's leading the world off a cliff. Now, I did find something similar to what I was telling you all about the European Union. I'm going to bring it up. For those of you who will join us, I would like if you go back and look at the show again, and then you'll understand what I'm talking about when I'm talking about this clip about Europe. Everybody, just bear with me. I'm going to play it. Where is it? It's something similar to what I was telling you about Scholz, the chancellor of Germany. I want you to listen to this real quick. We'll be right back. Let's look at that. Let's unpack that. Now, Germany, the economic engine of Europe. Not only is Germany the economic engine, but Germany is also the largest European economy and the second largest Western economy after the United States. Now, tell me, was it smart for Germany to enact all of these packages, these sanction packages against Russia? Now that the economy has entered a recession, quote unquote recession, which means that the entire Eurozone is entered a recession, because if Germany is the heart of and the economic engine and driver of Europe, and the heart has entered a recession, what does that say about the weaker or the lesser economy, right? Okay, now, why is the German chancellor now trying to reach out to the Russian president? It's a few things here. Because within a month or two, that is when the European Union usually starts to try to fill up their gas, underground gas reserve. They start trying to take in that so that they can have it filled for the winter months, right? Nobody's a fool. Who do you think you're dealing with? Anyway, now I want you to see this, because a lot of people, they just let this go. Now, you want to sanction me, right? 10, 11 sanctions now. Listen to me good. Not one, not two, not three. Maybe we should have rebounded. But we're talking about 10 and 11 sanction packages that were driven by Germans, right, and British and French, right, and Polish people, right, that was driven by those leaders. Now, Germany's success as a manufacturer and an economic and an industrial powerhouse was allowed due to the fact that Russia was supplying cheap gas and oil to Germany. And hold on, we can't leave this out. Algeria and other African nations were also supplying cheap oil and gas to Europe. Now, you take Russian gas out of the equation, Russian oil out of the equation, Russian commodities out of the equation. And now we see a deindustrialized Germany, which is the very heart of Europe's economy. So if we see a deindustrialized Germany, which is the heart of Europe's economy, falls into a recession, then what does that mean about all of the other dominoes that's attached to the German economy, which is Italy, Greece, and all of these other nations? So now they want to talk. You didn't want to talk when I was asking you to stop pushing NATO up to my border. You didn't want to talk when I kept saying, listen, you're threatening my security, you're going to force me to act. You didn't want to talk when I tried to come up with both ideas that was both acceptable to Russia and to you guys in the West. You didn't want to talk. You didn't want to talk when you issued 10 to 11 sanction packages against me. You didn't want to talk when you gave them Leopard 2 tanks to fight against me, or those air defense systems to fight against me. But you want to talk to me now that your economy is deindustrialized. Your economy has gone into a recession. Your people are in an uproar. Your project in Ukraine is collapsing. And oh yeah, let us not forget that we're quickly approaching the time where Germany and other European nations need gas so that they can fill up their underground gas storages. If you don't go to hell and go to hell with gasoline draws on, I don't know what to tell you. If I was in that seat, listen to me good. If I was in that seat and receiving that phone call, if I was Putin, you got a lot of bodies on your hand, buddy. You got a lot of destruction on your hand. You got a lot of blood shed on your hand. And to come to ask, to want to talk to me, to talk about economics when you got 10 or 11 sanctions on me and you stole $350 billion of my money? No, no, no. Now, in urban America, what a person would do is go knock on his door and say, listen, we got to settle this. Either you got to give me what you took from me, or you got to come out here and you got to show me your hands. And hands means you got to fight. Something like that. What Russia should do, no. I'm too busy to accept this call. Now beneath Russia. I'm too busy to hold it. You want to talk to me? It costs. You know what it costs? Remove those sanctions. All 11 packages. If it's hard for you to remove, guess what? It'll be even hard for you when the winter comes around. Remove all 10 to 11 sanction packages. Cease and desist with all weapon sales and deliveries to Ukraine. And then pull out all Western mercenaries. Then we can talk. That's the starting grounds for the talk. Otherwise, I'm going to grind you into the ground like I'm doing. Because now everything is beautiful for me. Everything has fallen my way. So why should I talk to you? Remember I told you guys on the show that when the West wants to talk, that is because they're losing and they're losing bad. When the West want to feel the temperature or something, they push it out through the media and say, well, maybe we can freeze the conflict or maybe we can do this. They want to see what Russia's reaction is going to be. Well, when they introduced that the German chancellor would talk, no. What do we have to talk about? You just closed down my consulates a few days ago. And you want to talk to me? We don't have anything to talk. I tell you what, we'll talk after I'm done with this thing that you and your partners built in Ukraine. When I'm done with that, we'll talk. But we're going to talk on my terms. And we're going to talk, and the conclusion will be that everything that I ask you for my security, will be given or else you won't enjoy security. How about that? It's not going to be where my security is threatening, yours is not. Hell, if my security is threatened, yours is going to be threatened. You understand? And this is what I was telling you about. This goes back to other things. When I was telling you about Africa and Latin America. Europe talks about its security. And an individual and everybody should enjoy security and prosperity in Europe. All the while, illegally occupying bases in Africa. And I asked the Europeans this. I said, well, there's protests, but there's not really anything to force your government to pull these people back. How would you feel if Chad, if Algeria, or if Sudan had bases in Paris, in London, in Berlin? You wouldn't like that. So how the hell, what makes you think that they like it? Huh? Think about this. I'm serious. Think about this. That's why I brought this to the forefront, too, and I'm going to bring this up, and I'll close out in a few minutes. But listen, people wonder why there's so much violence going on against Western people in the Middle East. And they don't think about these are reactions to actions. They just see it as something happened. They don't realize that the violence is a reaction to the actions of the West. Now, to give you an example, while they're demonizing and calling people terrorists and fundamentalists and extremists, right? What could be more extreme than Arabia or Tehran or Damascus having a base 10 miles, 20 miles from the Vatican? Wouldn't that be an outrage to Europe? Wouldn't that be an outrage to all the Catholics around the world? Wouldn't that be an outrage? Of course it would be. But if you look at it like that, then why aren't you outraged that America has military bases, Britain has military bases, 20 miles from the holiest cities in Islam, from Mecca and Medina? This is what I'm saying. When it affects you, it's an outrage. It's terrorism. But when it affects others, oh, they got to deal with that. They're just violent. the hypocrisy of the West. This is what's coming to boil right now. The hypocrisy and the arrogance of the West is what is boiling over now. And we see it in everything they do. Think about that. I want you to just think about that for a minute. What if Tehran, Damascus, and Arabia had military bases? Not one, multiple military bases outside of the Vatican. Rome, the seat of Western Christianity. That's the seat of Western Christianity, the Vatican. This would be unacceptable in the Western world. There would be outcries and everything. And not one outcry, and it's become acceptable when the West puts military bases outside Medina and Mecca. Why? Just why? I'm asking. Why? See, I point out these inconsistencies so that you can see why the trouble is brewing. Why you can see the manifestation of violence and bloodshed and war. You cannot keep doing these things and expect for it to be peace. How the hell can you make peace when the same order in which you're trying to make peace is the way you made the war? Huh? It's just not right, is it? And it doesn't fall like that. Listen, I know I kept you guys long enough, but I thought I was going to keep you. My shoulder is really giving me problems right now. I'm about to go ice it down. I'd like to thank each and every one of y'all joining us this weekend for the weekend blend of the Red Pill Diaries. On that note, we go out the same way we came in, with love and peace for every one of you all who loves truth and who is out here trying to promote the truth. But remember that God, the true and living God, he will always love you better. Until our next talk to you guys, and until we next speak again, stay strong, stay true, but above all things, stay righteous. I love you, and I got to say this. Mama, your baby boy loves you more than life. Deuces, everybody. I'm out.